A little over 2 years ago, on a rainy July afternoon in Devon in southwest England, Elbert Toomey's life changed forever. In a matter of seconds, a family holiday drive turned to the most devastating tragedy when their car was involved in a crash which claimed the lives of her baby son Oisin, then just 16 months old, and her unborn baby girl Elber Murray. Her husband Con died from his injuries 10 months later, while Elber herself was left with life-threatening injuries. It later emerged that the driver of the car which crashed into the family had left a suicide note at his home before setting out on the road. Elber Toomey is with me now. Good morning to you, Elber. Thank you for coming to studio. Now, we'll hear in a few minutes about the remarkable work you've been doing to try to highlight how police deal or should deal with the people of suicidal ideation. But before we go into all of that, just 2 years and 2 months on from the accident, how are you now?
Well, I suppose reality is I was dying like everybody else. And 19 surgeries later, I can walk, talk, drive. So from a physical point of view, I have a lot to be grateful for. Sure, I still have a lot of medical stuff going on. I was in London there a few weeks ago for medical checks, but it's pretty insignificant when you compare it to the big picture.
How long were you in hospital?
I would have been in Dartford Hospital for over 5 weeks and for a few days then in CUH when I returned to Cork.
Cork University Hospital. Mm. And I understand in the early stages, your family, your parents were told to go there fairly quickly because it was a matter of touch and go as to whether you would survive.
Yeah. When they were in touch with the British police, they would have been told to fly over immediately, not to wait for the morning flight.
What do you remember about that particular day?
I remember that it was raining. And, we had been for a swim in the morning and had our lunch. And then we were going to the indoor play centre for little men. So after that, my next memory would be the end of July.
Why had you decided to go on a motoring holiday to the southwest of England?
Well, I suppose as a child, my parents would have taken us to Torquay different times. And I had fond memories of Torquay and the Torquay people. And being 5.5 months pregnant with a little lady, we thought it was the safest option. We were afraid to fly. So that way, by taking the car, we could bring Oisin's toys and everything and have home away from home.
And it ended so tragically for you and for your family, your husband, Con, your beloved little boy, and then your unborn baby, all gone. How long did it take before you became aware of the extent of what had happened?
Well, I suppose I would have been unconscious and whatever for quite a bit. It would have been the end of July before I had any clue what had happened. Definitely would have been 3 to 4 weeks after the crash. And to be honest with you, I don't ever remember being told about Oisin being gone. I just remember knowing. Maybe it's the brain's own way of protecting itself. I don't know. I just remember knowing.
And how did they tell you that you had lost little Elber Murray?
Like that. I just knew. I just knew. Nobody ever had the conversation. Well, maybe they had the conversation with me, but I'm not aware of it.
And then Con was in intensive care for 10 months before he died. Did you get to see him after you yourself were discharged?
I did, yeah. I used to travel. After I left at Cork University Hospital, I would have moved home with my parents. And we'll say I was on crutches and whatever. So they were great. They undertook between mom and dad and my brother and sister that they all brought me to CUH. Every day, just to visit Con.
Was there ever a suggestion that he might just recover, that there was some hope there, I suppose? While there was life, there was some hope?
Well, that was my belief. Where there's life, there's hope.
And what about your own medical treatment? You mentioned at the start, was it 19 operations you had?
19 operations, yeah.
It might be easier to ask you what wasn't broken.
Well, no, I had a bad... I would have had a bad head injury and I was losing a lot of blood. I think they were the biggest concerns, really, from a life-threatening point of view. So, yeah, I have a lot of metal, but that's okay too. I'm able to walk and talk and drive, thanks be to God.
And at what stage, Elber, did you realise the reason for the crash? The fact that there was a young Polish man who'd had a marriage breakdown, a row with his wife, and just found, I think, the whole thing too much from left a suicide note and drove off in his car.
Well, I would have learnt about that, I suppose. It was late October, November after the crash. And I would say I would have been in touch and got the IPCC report, which gave me the details that, Mark Lartimerson had left a suicide note and that the police were involved.
That IPPC, that is the Independent
Police Complaints Commission, yeah.
And we'll come back to that. But and he, of course, lost his life in it as well. Now, you met his wife subsequently.
I did, yeah. I met his wife at Oisín's inquest last November.
What was that encounter like?
It was very emotional for both of us. But personally, I was glad to meet her and to let her know that I didn't blame her. I think that was very important for her to know.
Because that was something that was really gnawing at her. She did blame herself, did she?
Well, from what I had read, yeah, she did blame herself. And I just wanted, you know, it wasn't her fault. I mean, it was Marek Lartimerson was involved. It had, you know, people break up every day. And this is not what they do as a result, you know. So she couldn't, I didn't want her to hold herself responsible.
And what did you find out about his own circumstances then and his state of mind?
Well, literally, he had written a 4-page suicide note. And after his wife had asked him to leave their home, and a friend of theirs would have called the police and told them. And they sent out, obviously the police officers around were notified. And the police officer involved in our story spotted Marek, for whatever reason, with the best will and intention in the world. And really the training he had received, he put on his blue lights and siren and flashed at Marek to pull over. Now, Marek had done that loop, we'll say, 11 times that day without ever doing anything or driving. Now, that would have been found out after in CCTV footage, whatever. So the only change in the manner of his driving was when the police car was involved. Immediately he swerved to the other side of the road and crashed into us.
And we'll come on in a few minutes to talk about how the police have dealt with similar situations in the aftermath of that. But you talked about how you told his wife that you didn't hold anything against her. What about him? What about Marek?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, of course I blamed him. I mean, to be fair, he was the one that was, you know, he crashed into us. But, like, a priest friend would have visited Con in the September after the crash, and he would have asked me, used I pray for Marek? And I said, jeepers, no. Like, we were talking about prayer and whatever, and faith would be important to me. And he asked me, used I pray for him? And I said, no. And he asked me, would I? And I said, I couldn't. So he said he would pray for him on my behalf every day until I'd feel I was able to pray for him. And literally my response would have been, I hope you live to be very old, because I doubt I'll ever pray for him. That was September, and the following November, the month of the Holy Souls, I started lighting a candle in the church in CH for Mark.
So, this was last November or the previous November?
The previous November.
So literally within 4 or 5 months of the crash, you found yourself able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks be to God, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking actually last Thursday on the programme about forgiveness. We heard from a woman in Belfast whose father was murdered by the IRA, and she found herself able to forgive his killers, and partly because she and her mother had met the man mainly responsible, or one of them, for their murder, and he cried, he expressed regret. I suppose Marek wasn't in a position to express any regret.
But
to
I'm
you.
Sure when he left, and he's like, he was a dad, and he was a husband, I'm sure when he saw what the outcome of the crash was and that the way it wiped out our family, I'm sure that was enough for him.
And does it go without saying that as well as being able to pray for him, you have forgiven him as well?
Yes, I have, yeah, I have. And if I hadn't, to be honest with you, I really believe if I hadn't forgiven him, I'd be very bitter and angry. Now, of course, he was at fault, but like to forgive him has not allowed me to become bitter, do you know? Bitter and anger aren't good for anybody.
And yet you lost the love of your life, the loves of your life, your whole young family, your husband, Con, and the children. So how do you keep going forward now? What drives you?
Well, I suppose I'm blessed. I'd have fairly strong faith. And I would say I have an army in heaven to kick my ass out of bed every morning.
But somebody listening to this might say, look, you must have been very angry with God.
Sure I was, but like reality is it could be anybody's story. So then why couldn't it be me? Do you know what I'm saying?
Again, to play devil's advocate, why should it be you? I mean, what kind of a loving God would allow this to happen? Have you found yourself asking questions like that?
I suppose that's where forgiveness comes into point of view, do you know? I suppose it is. And like, I've got great support from my own family and Con's family and our friends and jeepers, people all over the country and in the UK who got masses said for us. They put pen to paper just to say thinking of you, do you know?
And what you've done, I suppose, as well, is to try to channel your, and not try, you are channeling your energies into getting something good to follow on from what happened in the way people like Marek, people who get into their cars with suicidal intent, mm-hmm. are dealt with by the police. Now, even though the initial IPCC investigation concluded that the officer who dealt with the case hadn't done anything wrong, mm-hmm. practices have changed, have they not?
Well, they have changed now. How they would, we'd say the police pursuit policy was changed at the end of December. So now an ordinary police officer can never initiate a pursuit. He has to have TPAC, or I'm not definite now of the, but there is a specialist training for pursuit drivers. And it's only the people with those training that can even initiate a pursuit.
So is it your belief, Elber, that in similar circumstances, a guy like Marek getting into his car like that would be dealt with differently by the police, irrespective of what that report said or concluded?
I do, to be honest. Yeah, I do. I think, and I would hope that they'll go further and across, we'd say, the police service in the UK and, like here, have suicide awareness training. Because, like, while I would have started all of this from the point of view of the suicidal driver because of our tragic story, the reality is poor guards and police come across, you know, they may come across somebody standing at the edge of a bridge or whatever, and it's hard on the police officer and the Garda, you know, to try and...
And you've also brought your campaign to the Garda authorities here as well.
Yes.
You were in Templemore recently. Tell me about that.
I was indeed, yeah.
At the Garda College?
I'd say back in April, I would have written to the Acting Commissioner, Noreen O'Sullivan, and explained what I was trying to do. And fair play to her, what a great lady. I would have got an email back from her within a couple of days for an extremely busy woman. And she would have put me in touch with the Assistant Commissioner Toomey, who I met, and I outlined what I'd like to see introduced, and great man, he went and he organised a meeting for me in Templemore with the Garda training staff.
What is the correct way of dealing with those individuals?
Well, I suppose you need to consider that a suicidal soul isn't a criminal. Do you know what I mean? And I believe should the police and the guards have basic suicide awareness training, then that would all clue in when they're dealing with a vulnerable person. Do you know? They're completely different to anybody else.
And it's obviously people's safety and health and survival is paramount or are paramount in those circumstances. But aside, for instance, from the idea of not putting on the blue light straight off when you spot the individual. Are there other things that need to be borne in mind as well, in your view?
Well, I suppose to do with the siren and we'd say the flashing lights and everything. Over at O'Sheen's inquest, our barrister would have compared it to, we'll say, a suicidal soul standing on the edge of a cliff, and that a police officer would run up to him and start blowing a whistle and shouting at him, which, of course, no police officer or guard would ever do. So I suppose for that reason, it highlights that if they have basic suicide awareness training, then should they come across the man on the bridge or a person in behind a steering wheel, then they would handle them with care.
Clearly, from what you've been saying from the outset, you have a strong faith. Is it that and this sense of mission about this are the two things that really sustain you mainly, plus the support of your families?
It is, without a doubt, yeah. It is, without a doubt.
Now, your career has been in teaching, and I'm sure there were people that, you know, looked forward to the day when maybe you might be able to return to the classroom. What do you think? Is that something that you think might happen or will happen?
That's a very good question, Seanan. But to be honest, I genuinely don't know. I genuinely don't know. I suppose my mission at the moment is to make sure that that all our guards and the police in the UK will be trained in suicide awareness. And that's my focus at the moment, but down the road, who knows? I believe when mission is accomplished, I'll know where I'm going.
And just going back to your recovery, because, you know, you walked into the studio unaided, maybe a small little bit slowly. Your voice is fine. You look great. So, but presumably, there's a bit of metal inside in you. So what are the things that are still, if you like, lingering by way of the injury? Is it do you get headaches or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. But you get used to them. Yeah, I've had a headache every day with the last 2 years, but that's just part of life. You don't concentrate on it, you know? And I suppose metal-wise and everything, we'll say my jaw would have been rebuilt and whatever, and I have a double pelvic plate in my pelvis, but, like, they're all minor.
And I presume you're on painkillers pretty much all the time, are you?
No, I don't take any painkillers, no.
You don't?
No, no.
And the other thing that I thought was remarkable, you drove from Cork to Dublin today.
Yeah, yeah. No bother, thank God. Actually, the Christmas after the crash, I would have gone to CUH to Conn, and my brother would have come with me. And my dad had got me a replacement golf. Well, I'd paid for it, but I'd got a car, but I hadn't driven. And Christmas night, when we came out of CH, I drove the 50-odd miles. It was, we'll say, home to Mum and Dad.
So back it was up to there, near Newmarket in North Cork.
Yeah, back up to Rockchapel, yeah, yeah. So, thank God to be able to drive. I suppose I'm blessed in the sense that I don't have any memory of the crash, so it never put me off driving, do you know? Thank God.
And is that the only memory loss that you have, Albert? Are there other things?
No, that's it, thank God.
It's just that period. The crash and the aftermath, yeah. And presumably, you might be as well off not remembering.
Oh, yeah, and that would be my thinking. The brain has its own way of protecting itself, to be honest with you.
Albert Toomey, thank you very much indeed for coming to studio.
You're very welcome. Thank you.